Okay, Kitty Boo. We're continuing chapter 31 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. So you remember they were talking about their owls, and they were trying to figure out... Well, they were just getting a little mini-lecture from McGonagall. Their first exam, Theory of Charms, was scheduled for Monday morning. Harry agreed to test Hermione after lunch on Sunday, but regretted it almost at once. She was very agitated and kept snatching the book back from him to check that she had gotten the answer completely right, finally hitting him hard on the nose with the sharp edge of achievements in charming. "Why don't you just do it yourself?" he said firmly, handing the book back to her, his eyes watering. Meanwhile, Ron was reading 2 years of charm notes with his fingers in his ears, his lips moving soundlessly. Seamus was lying flat on his back on the floor, reciting the definition of a substantive charm, while Dean checked it against the standard book of spells, grade 5. Parvati and Lavender, who were practicing their basic locomotion charms, were making pencil cases race each other around the edge of the table. Dinner was a subdued affair that night. Harry and Ron did not talk much, but ate with gusto, having studied hard all day. Hermione, on the other hand, kept putting down her knife and fork and diving under the table for her bag, from which she would seize a book to check some fact or figure. Ron was just telling her that she ought to eat a decent meal or she would not sleep that night, when her fork slid from her limp fingers and landed with a loud tinkle on her plate. "Oh my goodness," she said faintly, staring into the entrance hall. "Is that them? Is that the examiners?" Harry and Ron whipped around on the bench. Through the doors to the great hall, they could see Umbridge standing with a small group of ancient-looking witches and wizards. Umbridge, Harry was pleased to see, looked rather nervous. "Shall we go and have a look?" said Ron. Harry and Hermione nodded as they hastened toward the double doors into the entrance hall, slowing down as they stepped over the threshold to walk sedately past the examiners. Harry thought Professor Marchbanks must be the tiny stooped witch with a face so lined it looked as though it must have been draped with cobwebs. Umbridge was speaking to her very deferentially. Professor Marchbanks seemed to be a little deaf. She was answering Umbridge very loudly, considering that they were only a foot apart. "Journey was fine, Journey was fine. We've made it plenty of times before," she said impatiently. "Now, I haven't heard from Dumbledore lately," she added, peering around the hall, as though hopeful he might suddenly emerge from a broom cupboard. "No idea where he is, I suppose." "None at all," said Umbridge, shooting a malevolent look at Harry, Ron, and Hermione, who were now dawdling around the foot of the stairs as Ron pretended to do up his shoelace. "But I dare say the Ministry of Magic will track him down soon enough." "I doubt it," shouted tiny Professor Marchbanks. "Not if Dumbledore doesn't want to be found. I should know. Examined him personally, transfiguration and charms, what he did newts. Did things with the wand I'd never seen before." "Yes, well..." "Yes, well," cried Professor Umbridge, as Harry, Ron, and Hermione dragged their feet up the marble staircase as slowly as they dared. "Let me show you to the staff room. I dare say you'd like a cup of tea after your journey." It was an uncomfortable sort of evening. Everyone was trying to do some last-minute studying, but nobody seemed to be getting very far. Harry went to bed early, but then lay awake for what felt like hours. He remembered his careers consultation, and McGonagall's furious declaration that she would help him become an Auror if it was the last thing she did. He wished he had expressed a more achievable ambition, now that exam time was there. He knew that he was not the only one lying awake, but none of the others in the dormitory spoke. And finally, one by one, they fell asleep. None of the 5th years talked very much at breakfast the next day either. Parvati was practicing incantations under her breath, while the salt cellar in front of her twitched. Hermione was reading Achievement in Charming so fast that her eyes appeared blurred, and Neville kept dropping his knife and fork and knocking over the marmalade. Once breakfast was over, the 5th and 7th years milled around in the entrance hall, while the other students went off to classes. Then at 9:30, they were called forward class by class to re-enter the great hall, which was now arranged exactly as Harry had seen it, into the pensive when his father, Sirius, Edwin, his father, Sirius, and Snape had been taking their owls. The four house tables had been removed and replaced instead with many tables for one, all facing the staff table end of the hall, where Professor McGonagall stood facing them. When all were seated and quiet, she said, "You may begin," and turned over an enormous hourglass on the desk beside her, on which were also spare quills, ink bottles, and rolls of parchment. Harry turned over his paper, heart thumping hard. Three rows to his right and four seats ahead, Hermione was already scribbling. He lowered his eyes to the first question. "Give the incantation, A, and B, describe the wand movement required to make objects fly." It's weird that they ask questions like that instead of... Yeah.
And flick.
But it's weird that they ask that instead of doing, like, an oral exam where they
do that
show. But, like, what's the point in describing it?
Because they can't all do a one-by-one oral exam. They have to have some things that are written. So...
Not necessarily.
Okay, well, whatever. Just
Harry had a fleeting memory of a club soaring high into the air and landing loudly on the thick skull of a troll. Smiling slightly, he bent over the table and began to write. "Well, that wasn't too bad, was it?" asked Hermione anxiously in the entrance hall 2 hours later, still clutching the exam paper. "I'm not sure I did myself justice on cheering charms. I ran out of time. Did you put in the counter charm for hiccups? I wasn't quite sure whether I ought to. It felt like too much." And on question 23, "Hermione," Ron said sternly, "we've been through this before. We're not going to go through every exam afterward. It's bad enough doing them once." The 5th years ate lunch with the rest of the school. The 4th house tables reappeared over lunch hour. And then they trooped off to the small chamber beside the Great Hall, where they were to wait until they were called for their practical examination. Oh, there you go. As small groups of students were called forward in alphabetical order, those left behind muttered incantations and practiced wand movements, occasionally poking one another in the back or the eye by mistake. Hermione's name was called. Trembling, she left the chamber with Anthony Goldstein, Gregory Goyle, and Daphne Greengrass, from the ancient, most noble house of Greengrass. Students who had already been tested did not return afterwards, so Harry and Ron had no idea how Hermione had done. "She'll be fine. Remember, she got 112% on one of our charms tests," said Ron. 10 minutes later, Professor Flitwick called. "Parkinson Pansy, Patil Padma, Patil Parvati, Potter Harry." "Good luck," said Ron quietly. Harry walked into the Great Hall, clutching his wand so tightly his hand shook. "Professor Tofty is free, Potter," squeaked Professor Flitwick, who was standing just inside the door. He pointed Harry toward what looked like the very oldest and baldest examiner, who was sitting behind a small table in the far corner, a short distance from Professor Marchbanks, who was halfway through testing Draco Malfoy. "Potter, is it?" said Professor Tofty, consulting his notes and peering over his pince-nez at Harry as he approached. "The famous Potter." Out of a corner of his eye, Harry distinctly saw Malfoy throw a scathing look over him. The wine glass Malfoy had been levitating fell to the floor and smashed. Harry could not suppress a grin. Professor Tofty smiled back at him encouragingly. "That's it," he said in his quavery old voice. "No need to be nervous. Now, if I could just ask you to take this egg cup and make it do some cartwheels for me." On the whole, Harry thought it went rather well. His levitation charm was certainly much better than Malfoy's had been, though he wished he had not mixed up the incantations for color change and growth charms, so that his rat, he was supposed to be turning orange, swelled shockingly, and was the size of a badger before Harry could rectify his mistake. Harry was glad to see Hermione had not been in the hall at the time, and neglected to mention it to her afterward. He could tell Ron, though. Ron had caused a dinner plate to mutate into a large mushroom and had no idea how it happened. There was no time to relax that night. They went straight to the common room after dinner and submerged themselves in studying for Transfiguration the next day. Harry went to bed, his head buzzing with complex spells and models and theories. He forgot the definition of a switching spell during his written exam next morning, but thought his practical could have been a lot worse. At least he had managed to vanish the whole of his iguana, whereas poor Hannah Abbott lost her head completely at the next table, and somehow managed to multiply her ferret into a flock of flamingos, causing the examination to be halted for 10 minutes, while the birds were captured and carried out of the halls. They had their herbology exam on Wednesday. Other than a small bite from a fanged geranium, Harry felt he had done reasonably well. And then on Thursday, Defense Against the Dark Arts. Here, for the first time, Harry felt sure he had passed. He had no problem with any of the written questions and took particular pleasure during the practical examination in performing all the counter jinxes and defensive spells right in front of Umbridge, who was watching coolly from the doors near the entrance hall. "Oh, bravo," cried Professor Tofty, who was examining Harry again, when Harry demonstrated a perfect Bogart banishing of spell. "Very good indeed. Well, that's all, Potter, unless..." He leaned forward a little. "I heard from my dear friend Tiberius Ogden that you can produce a Patronus for a bonus point." Harry raised his wand, looking directly at Umbridge, and imagined her being sacked. "Expecto Patronum." The silver stag erupted from the end of his wand and cantered the length of the hall. All of the examiners looked around to watch its progress, and when it dissolved in silver mist, Professor Tofty clapped his veined and knotted hands enthusiastically. "Excellent," he said. "Very well, Potter, you may go." As Harry passed Umbridge beside the door, their eyes met. There was a nasty smile playing around her wide, slack mouth, but he didn't care. Unless he was very much mistaken, he was not planning on saying it to anybody in case he was. He had just achieved an outstanding owl. On Friday, Harry and Ron had a day off while Hermione sat at her ancient runes exam. And as they had the whole weekend in front of them, they permitted themselves a break from studying. They stretched and yawned beside the open window, through which warm summer air wafted over them as they played a desultory game of wizard chess. Harry could see Hagrid in the distance teaching a class on the edge of the forest. He was trying to guess what creatures they were examining. He thought it must be unicorns, because the boys seemed to be standing back a little bit, when the portrait hole opened and Hermione clambered in, looking thoroughly bad-tempered. "How are the runes?" said Ron, yawning and stretching. "I mistranslated AWAS," said Hermione furiously. "It means partnership, not defense. I mixed it up with IWAS." "Ah, well," said Ron lazily, "that's only one mistake, isn't it? You still get..." "Oh, shut up," said Hermione angrily. "Could be the one mistake that makes the difference between a pass and a fail. And what's more, someone's put another niffler in Umbridge's office. I don't know how they got it through that new door, but I just walked past there, and Umbridge is shrieking her head off. By the sound of it, it tried to take Chuck out of her leg." "Good," said Harry and Ron together. "It is not good," said Hermione hotly. "She thinks it's Hagrid doing it, remember? We do not want Hagrid chucked out." "He's teaching at the moment. You can't blame him," said Harry, gesturing out of the window. "Oh, you're so naive sometimes, Harry. You really think Umbridge will wait for proof?" said Hermione, who seemed determined to be in a towering temper, and she swept off toward the girls' dormitories, banging the door behind her. "Such a lovely, sweet-tempered girl," said Ron very quietly, prodding his queen forward so she could begin beating up one of Harry's knights. Hermione's bad mood persisted for most of the weekend, though Harry and Ron found it quite easy to ignore. As they spent most of Saturday and Sunday studying for potions on Monday, the exam which Harry was looking forward to least, and which he was sure would be the one that would be his downfall of his ambitions to become an Auror. Sure enough, he found the written exam difficult, though he thought he could have got full marks on the question about Polyjuice Potion. He could describe its effects extremely accurately, having taken it illegally in his second year. The afternoon practical was not as dreadful as he had expected it to be. With Snape absent from the proceedings, he found he was much more relaxed than he was usually while he was making potions. Neville, who was sitting very near Harry, was also looking happier than Harry had ever seen him during potions class. When Professor Marchbanks said, "Step away from your cauldrons, please, the examination is over," Harry corked his sample flask, feeling that he could not have achieved a good grade. Feeling he might not have achieved a good grade, but he had, with luck, avoided a fail. "Only 4 exams left," said Parvati Patil wearily, as they headed back to the Gryffindor common room. "Only," said Hermione snappishly. "I've got arithmetic. It's probably the toughest subject there is." Nobody was foolish enough to snap back, so she was unable to vent her spleen on any of them, and was reduced to telling off some first years for giggling too loudly in the common room. Harry was determined to perform well in Tuesday's Care of Magical Creatures exam, so as not to let Hagrid down. A practical examination took place in the afternoon on the lawn on the edge of the Forbidden Forest, where students were required to correctly identify the gnarl hidden among a dozen hedgehogs. The trick was to offer them all milk in turn. Gnarls, highly suspicious creatures whose quills had many magical properties, generally went berserk at what they saw as an attempt to poison them. And then, to demonstrate correct handling of the bow truckle, feed and clean a fire crab without sustaining serious burns, and choose from a wide selection of food the diet they would give a sick unicorn. When Harry could see Hagrid watching anxiously out of his cabin window. When Harry's examiner, a plump little witch this time, smiled at him and told him he could leave, Harry gave Hagrid a fleeting thumbs up before heading back into the castle. The astronomy exam on Wednesday morning went well enough. Harry was not convinced he had got the names of all of Jupiter's moons right, but at least he was confident that none of them were inhabited by mice. They had to wait until evening for their practical astronomy. The afternoon was devoted instead to divination. Even by Harry's low standards in divination, the exam went very badly. He might as well have been trying to see moving pictures on the desktop as in the stubbornly blank crystal ball. He lost his head completely during tea leaf reading, saying it looked to him as though Professor Marchbanks would shortly be meeting a round, dark, soggy stranger, and rounded off the whole fiasco by mixing up the life and headlines on her paper and informing her she ought to have died the previous Tuesday. "Well, we were always going to fail that one," said Ron gloomily, as they ascended the marble staircase. He had just made Harry feel rather better by telling him how he had told the examiner in detail the ugly man with a wart on his nose in the crystal ball, only to look up and realize he'd been describing his examiner's reflection. "We shouldn't have taken that stupid subject in the first place," said Harry. "Yeah, at least we can give it up now." "Yeah," said Harry, "no more pretending we care what happens when Jupiter and Uranus get too friendly. And from now on, I don't care if my tea leaf spells die, Ron, die. I'm just chucking them in the bin where they belong." Harry laughed just as Hermione came running up behind them. He stopped laughing at once in case it annoyed her. "Well, I think I've done all right in arithmetic," she said, and Harry and Ron both sighed in relief. Just in time for a quick look over our star chart before dinner. Then, when they reached the top of the astronomy tower at 11 o'clock, they found a perfect night for stargazing, cloudless and still. The grounds were bathed in silvery moonlight, and there was a slight chill in the air. Each of them set up his or her telescope, and when Professor Marchbanks gave the word, proceeded to fill in the blank star chart he had been given. Professor Marchbanks and Tofty strolled among them, watching as they entered the precise positions of the stars and planets they were observing. All was quiet except for the rustle of parchment, the occasional creak of a telescope as it was adjusted on its stand, and the scribbling of many quills. Half an hour passed, and then an hour. The little squares of reflected gold light flickering on the ground below started to vanish as lights in the castle windows were extinguished. As Harry completed the constellation Orion on his chart, however, the front doors of the castle opened directly below the parapet where he was standing, so that light spilled down the stone steps a little way across the lawn. Harry glanced down as he made a slight adjustment to the position of his telescope, and saw five or six elongated shadows moving over the brightly lit grass before the doors swung shut and the lawn became a sea of darkness once more. Harry put his eye back to the telescope and refocused it, now examining Venus. He looked out his chart to enter the planet there, but something distracted him. Pausing with his quill suspended over the parchment, he squinted down into the shadowy grounds and saw half a dozen figures walking over the lawn. If they had not been moving, and the moonlight had not been gliding over the tops of their heads, they would have been indistinguishable from the dark ground on which they stood. Even at this distance, Harry had a funny feeling that he recognized the walk of the squattest among them, who seemed to be leading the group. He could not think why Umbridge would be taking a stroll outside past midnight, much less accompanied by five others. Then somebody coughed behind him, and he remembered he was halfway through an exam. He had quite forgotten Venus's position. Jamming his eye to his telescope, he found it again, and was again on the point of entering it on the star chart, when, alert for any odd sound, he heard a distant knock that echoed through the deserted grounds, followed immediately by a muffled barking of a large dog. He looked up, his heart hammering. There were lights on in Hagrid's windows, and the people he had been observing crossing the lawn were now silhouetted against them. The door opened, and he distinctly saw six tiny figures walk over the threshold. The door closed again, and there was silence. Harry felt very uneasy. He glanced around to see whether Ron or Hermione had noticed what he had. But Professor Marchbanks came walking behind him at that moment, and, not wanting to appear as though he was sneaking looks at anyone else's work, he hastily bent over his star chart and pretended to be adding notes to it, while really he was peering over the top of the parapet toward Hagrid's cabin. Figures were now moving across the cabin windows, temporarily blocking the light. He could feel Professor Marchbanks' eyes on the back of his neck, and he pressed his eye again to the telescope, staring up at the moon, though he had marked its position an hour ago. But as Professor Marchbanks moved on, he heard a roar from the distant cabin that echoed through the darkness right at the top of the astronomy tower. Several of the people around Harry ducked out from behind their telescopes and peered in the direction of Hagrid's cabin. Professor Tofty gave a dry little cough. "Try and concentrate now, boys and girls," he said softly. Most people returned to their telescopes, but Harry looked to his left. Hermione was now gazing transfixed at Hagrid's. "I have 20 minutes to go," said Professor Tofty. Hermione jumped and returned at once to her star chart. Harry looked down at his own and noticed he had mislabeled Venus as Mars. He bent to correct it. There was a loud bang from the grounds. Several people said, "Ouch," as they poked themselves in the face with the ends of their telescopes, hastening to see what was going on below. Hagrid's door burst open, and by the light flooding out of the cabin, they saw him quite clearly, a massive figure roaring and brandishing his fists, surrounded by six people, all of whom, judging by the tiny threads of red light they were casting in his direction, seemed to be attempting to stun him. "No," cried Hermione. "My dear," said Professor Tofty in a scandalized voice, "this is an examination." But nobody was paying the slightest attention to their star chart anymore. Jets of red light were still flying around Hagrid's cabin, yet they somehow seemed to be bouncing off him. He was upright, and still, as far as Harry could see, fighting. Cries and yells echoed across the grounds, and a man yelled, "Be reasonable, Hagrid," and Hagrid roared, "Reasonable be damned, you won't be taking me like this, Dawlish." Harry could see the tiny outline of Fang attempting to defend Hagrid, leaping at the wizards surrounding him until a stunning spell caught him and he fell to the ground. Hagrid gave a howl of fury, lifted the culprit bodily from the ground, and threw him. The man flew what looked like 10 feet and did not get up again. Hermione gasped, both hands over her mouth. Harry looked around at Ron and saw that he too looked scared. None of them had seen Hagrid in a real temper before. "Look," squealed Parvati, who was leaning over the parapet and pointing to the foot of the castle, where the front door seemed to have opened again. More light had spilled across the dark lawn, and a single long black shadow was now rippling across the lawn. "Now really," said Professor Tofty anxiously, "only 16 minutes left, you know." But nobody paid him the slightest attention. They were watching the person now sprinting toward the battle beside Hagrid's cabin. "How dare you," the figure shouted as she ran. "How dare you?" "It's McGonagall," whispered Hermione. "Leave him alone, alone, I say," said Professor McGonagall's voice through the darkness. "On what grounds are you attacking him? He has done nothing to warrant such..." Hermione, Parvati, and Lavender all screamed. No fewer than 4 stars had shot from the figures around the cabin toward Professor McGonagall. Halfway between the cabin and the castle, the red beams collided with her. For a moment she looked luminous, illuminated by an eerie red glow, then lifted right off her feet, landed hard on her back, and moved no more. "The galloping gargoyles," shouted Professor Tofty, who seemed to have forgotten the exam completely. "Not so much as a warning, outrageous behavior." "Cowards," bellowed Hagrid, his voice carried clearly to the top of the tower. Several lights flickered back on inside the castle. "Ruddy cowards, have some of that and that." "Oh my," gasped Hermione. Hagrid had taken two massive swipes at his closest attackers. Judging by their immediate collapse, they'd been knocked cold. Harry saw him double over and thought for a moment he'd been finally overcome by a spell. But on the contrary, the next moment Hagrid was standing again with what appeared to be a sack on his back. Then Harry realized it was Fang's limp body that was draped over his shoulders. "Get him! Get him!" screamed Umbridge. But her remaining helper seemed reluctant to go within reach of Hagrid's fists. Indeed, he was backing away so fast he tripped over one of his unconscious colleagues and fell over. Hagrid had turned and begun to run with Fang, still hung around his neck. Umbridge sent one last stunning spell after him, but it missed, and Hagrid, running full pelt toward the distant gates, disappeared into the darkness. There was a long minute's quivering silence, and everybody gazed open-mouthed into the grounds. Then Professor Tofty's voice said feebly, 5 minutes to go, everybody?" Though he had only filled in 2/3 of his chart, Harry was desperate for the end of the exam. When it came at last, he, Ron, and Hermione forced their telescopes haphazardly back into their holders and dashed back down the spiral staircase. None of the students were going to bed. They were all talking loudly and excitedly at the foot of the stairs about what they had witnessed. And maybe we'll stop there. We'll see all what they were talking about next time. I hope you like your little kitten, boo.
You're a sweet girl. I love you so much.
Good night, baby girl.